check another rule I see here, another apology analysis.
My apology is not submitting the device
Gentlemen, my name is Shaheen Salamander. Good morning, dear Shwane, Shwane, I'm a member of the committee.
Morning, my name is Hansen Tegel, I'm a member of the committee.
I'm a member of this portfolio committee.
Morning, Chief, members and the president, my name is Marco Hase, a member of this committee from the Popo Province.
Thank you very much, Gifford. Take it over to the legislative council.
Thank you very much, sir.
Okay, thank you. Handing over to you with the understanding that will save us some minutes possible. I hope your document is detailed enough. We can listen ourselves and some of the information, but all the key data.
Thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity to do this presentation this morning. Our visit to the portfolio committee is over, due Chair, so if we are going to try and squeeze this in a few minutes, we'll try and do so. Although we had wanted to take a couple of hours to take you through this and some of our challenges, but we'll try. Quickly, Chair, and to the committee members and the colleagues, our vision as the DBCB is that we want to be the foremost transformation agent in the South African built environment landscape. As far as our mission is concerned, is that we aim to lead the evolution of the built environment, legislative and regulatory identity, in order to create a transformed, empowered, inclusive, modern, healthy, and economic enhancement in the environment sector. Further, we aim to actively contribute to the sustainable development of South Africa's social and economic infrastructure in support of national development objectives. In terms of the institutional alignment, quickly Chair, is that we are a member of the Black Business Council. The Black Business Council is our mother body and obviously the confederation as far as Black Business is concerned in the country. And as the BCPE, we are concerned with the construction and the building environment sector under the BBC. You will also realize that we are particularly interestingly constituted as we have both member associations as well as corporate as our members. So under the Black Business Council, you'll see that some of our sister organizations include the likes of NAFCO, the DMF, the South African Mining Development Agency, and many others. This was just to illustrate that there are many other sister organizations that fall under the BBC. In fact, at the last count, we have about 52 organizations that fall under the umbrella of the Black Business Council. And as the BBCBE, we then further have our own members who are both organizations as well as corporate. And in terms of the organizations, just to illustrate the point there, we've got the South African Women in Construction Cabinet, and the president is here, who is also our treasurer general. We've got SAPTAMCO, these are our consultants and professionals in the economic space. NAFCON, largely constituted of SME contractors. We've got our youth sector that is very vibrant under the BBCBE. And we also have our corporate who are an integral part of our membership component. In terms of the sector coverage, Chair and members of the committee, we cover the whole spectrum or the whole value chain of the built environment. So our members start with professionals, we have got contractors, we also have manufacturers and suppliers, as well as other training service providers. We do have a huge interest from members who are active in the training space, and those are an integral part of our membership. So if you look at the categories that we cover in terms of membership, we cover the whole, if you look at all the most important role players as far as the construction industry is concerned. Our organization is brief. We have a very flat structure in terms of the leadership of the organization. We have got three office bearers. Two of them have already introduced themselves to you this morning. The one that is not yet the president, and I'm the CEO, and we do our work mainly through our subcommittees. So we have subcommittees covering all the major areas that impact on our members and the environment within which we are operating. Quickly going through the context, Chair, we have given the members the statistics as we have them from the CNTB, in terms of the companies that are registered on the register of contractors. And then you will see that this slide actually gives you the number of registrations per grade, including the percentages in terms of black ownership. We must qualify this issue of black ownership here, because when you look at the application form from the CIDB, really it depends on the information provided by the company that is registering. All they've got to do is just to tell the CIDB that this is the percentage of black shareholding, and at the moment the CIDB has got no way of verifying whether that information is true or not. So if I'm applying and I can say that I'm 100% black owned, the CIDB takes the information at face value. However, there is a process currently wherein we are working together with the CIDB as well as the Construction Sector Sector Council to ensure that your CBE is report as it is. So when you get verified whether you are a black owned company or not, that report, we are working together to ensure that that report is then submitted to the CIDB. So in the future, when companies register on the CIDB register, they then have to submit that report. That report will then verify whether or not the companies are black owned as indicated. So at the moment, we are taking the information at face value that whatever they indicate on the application form is actually the true status of their BEE ownership. So the information is there at the moment, and you can see that when you look at your grade ones, the level of BEE shareholding is quite high at 96%. And if you look at, if you go all the way to your grade 9, you will see that currently the BEE ownership stands at 41%. And like I said, we are taking this information with a pinch of salt, because at the end of the day, as Meta said, there is no way of verifying how true that information is. When it comes to women ownership, again, we are faced with the same dilemma, that companies can just merely inform the state about the level of their women ownership. There's no way of verifying in the moment, as you can see. And as far as that slide is concerned, at grade 1, we are looking at 41% women ownership, and if you go all the way to grade 9, that ownership stands at 27%. So those are the stats as are presented to the industry by the CIDB at the moment. Now, obviously, this means a couple of things for us when we look at the context generally. We are seeing that as far as the ratings are concerned, there's about 4,000 ratings in the register of contractors at the moment. 155,000 of those are actually at grade 1 as we speak. That represents about approximately 91% of all the ratings registered on the register of contractors. When you look at them closely, the black ownership, your median percentage there stands around 95%, and women at around 41%. But members, this is not reflective of the takeover of the industry that comes to black companies and women owned companies. So yes, as far as the stats are concerned, you can see that if you look at the stats carefully, you can see that the industry has made strides in terms of transformation. But when you look at the amount of takeover that the black companies, women and youth owned companies are actually generating, there is no correlation between the two. So that's the problem that we are sitting with, and that is what we need to address through our various interventions. The other point that we want to make here, Chair of the Committee, is that DPW as a custodian of the industry must accept executive authority relative to other role players in the industry. Our view is that the department is not exercising its authority. The department is a custodian of this industry. We can therefore not have other role players, other departments, SOEs, and so on and so forth, play a much more assertive role compared to our custody. It is important that the department play that role. For example, at the moment we are having a parallel discussion, for instance, with the Minister of Queens on the establishment of a state-owned construction company. We don't see the DPW being part of those discussions. There is, again, a discussion around an establishment of a state-owned construction bank. The department should be leading those discussions. We shouldn't be having us a department that other role players playing that assertive role and taking ownership and leadership on issues that are facing the industry. The department must take seriously its role as a custodian of this industry. DPW must partner with industry associations in order to effectively implement development programs that are very targeted to. Chair, the problem of development still remains a significant challenge in this. And we think that it's about time that these partners start partnering with other role players, including associations like ourselves, industry associations, that can be consistent button to roll out the programs and achieve our developmental progress. At the end of the day, all we are here for is to ensure that we empower our people, is to ensure that we transform the industry. And I think that partnership is there for us to be able to take seriously. And we are making ourselves to work together with the department to ensure that the programs that are aimed at developing industry players, especially the previously disadvantaged, are conceived and successfully implemented. As far as the context is concerned, Madam Chair, we are talking now in a period where we should be looking at the implementation of the PPP regulation 2017, which was introduced on the 1st of April this year. It is very important that we see eye to eye with the department on how this regulation will be implemented, because in considering this regulation, the idea was that we need to empower the emerging sector. And so the regulations are there, we must just now look at how do we implement them and how do we do monitoring and implementation so that at the end of the day we can then be comfortable when we are seeing that the aims that we had when we introduced the regulations are actually being achieved on the ground. As far as the issue of the cooperatives is concerned, Chair and colleagues members, what we are aware of is that government, through both the DCI and the Department of Small Business Enterprises, has invested billions of rands into cooperatives annually. Now, at the moment, really, we don't see the return on investment. And if you look specifically at the construction industry, I mean, we are not aware of any significant co-op that is at level 7 or level 8 or level 9, and that is being given projects either by government departments, municipalities, or by SOEs. So at the moment, really, we see cooperatives as very relevant as far as the construction industry is concerned. There will be more information that we'll provide to you later around one of the successful cooperatives model around SGC, which is currently being implemented by the South African Union in Construction. So we, on the analysis of the human empowerment program, the TG will speak more about that at a later stage. Now, more closely to the challenges, Chair and committee members, we see that there is no traction at the moment for contractor development programs, both within the DPWF and other public sector time bodies. If you cast your mind back to 5-10 years ago, you know, there used to be a lot of noise about all the programs that DPW has, provincial DPW partners has, around contractor development. We are no longer hearing that voice. We are no longer seeing that coming through from SOEs around their CPDs. We are no longer seeing a lot of concerted effort by municipalities to ensure that CDP is in place. So at the end of the day, what we are seeing is that we have taken really the foot off the pedal as far as the implementation of contract development programs is concerned generally, not only within DPWF, but also with other public sector time bodies. And that's where the challenge is at the moment. Number two, and this specifically has to do with other policy instruments that are at our disposal. This has to do with the potential emerging status policy instrument that sits with the CIA. At the moment, this tool that is supposed to empower and develop emerging contractors is not being applied. The other challenge that we are seeing is the lack of unbundling of projects. We are still fighting changes this day, clients that are taking out tenders in a manner that excludes us. So one of the programs that we are fighting at the moment is with the Department of Education in the Eastern Cape, where there's clusters, about 30 or so schools. And that makes those schools, obviously, the project out of reach for a small consultant and for a small contractor. So at the moment, as it stands, that project will only be accessible to companies that are grade 9 registered companies at the moment. However, these are schools, Chair, and if you unbundle those, you will be able to see a lot of your lower grade contractors for them to participate meaningfully in such opportunities. So this is the challenge that we are faced with at the moment in the market. Outsourcing to implementing agents. This is another problem. If you look at the likes of UHA, the likes of DBSA, for instance, once client bodies have given those implementing agents projects, then forget about contractor development. It doesn't matter. Those projects are regarded to as fast-track projects, things are done quickly, we must deliver the assets. So there is no focus anymore on community development. So all these projects that are being used to be implementing cases are not assisting us in terms of empowering and developing our smaller contractors. Access to project opportunities, and again we'll see in terms of the solutions check, we think that this measure is halfway addressed with the supervision regulations and the mandatory 30% subcontracting, but more needs to be done in terms of ensuring that the opportunity to access the project is made available to the target groupings. Access to finance, this is a perennial problem. And by access to finance, in the main, we mean to be construction performance guarantees as well as working capital. This still remains a problem for the majority of our up and coming and developing emerging contractors. Non-payment of providers by public sector clients and main contractors, this is a very big problem that we are facing at the moment. It's a serious problem. We have reported in certain quarters where we said government is actually guilty of SMM genocide. If you look at the trends of late and non-payment to service providers, primarily by government. And of course, our main contractors are also the main culprits when it comes to this, and we should not allow them to get off the hook. Therefore, we must come up with policy interventions to ensure that we position our subcontractors, our SMEs, in a position where they are able to overcome this problem. And you will see, in terms of our solutions, some of the solutions that we are putting on the table to ensure that main contractors don't get away with MENA as MENA currently stands. The other main problem, Chair, that we are facing at the moment is instability on the construction side due to the localization phenomenon. Now, we need to unpack this a little bit. What is happening at the moment is very much untenable. You have a project as a main contractor, you land in a particular locality to come and implement the project. Immediately when you get there, you get the local SMEs already ready to come in and participate in the project. The unfortunate part of this is that the locals obviously organize themselves in such a way that they do not allow other SMEs from other areas outside of the area where you're going to be to participate in the project. Now, we have seen two things managed around this. The first one is that you then have got violent gangs that arrive with guns at your site and demand that they are going to participate on your site. And if you do not obviously accede to their demand, they close the site, they intimidate your staff, and so on and so forth. This is a big problem, Chair, that we are facing. And this is actually in our painful roots across the country, as you speak. We are getting reports from across the country that people are now possibly trying to participate in projects. This is a big problem. The second one is the problem where you find that people constitute themselves in such a way that they say, no, this project is actually in our wards, okay? So if it is in Ward 15, you don't want people from Ward 16 to come and participate in this project. Now that's very short-sighted, because you can only build one clinic in your lifetime in your ward. Okay? When the project is done there, the very people that are engaged in that project will want to go. They will also want to go and participate in projects in other wards. Now the problem is, if you accept when you are fortunate enough to have a project in your ward, if they close out others from other wards, they will also close you out in their ward. Now that is something you don't know, and I think this is very short-sighted. Now, check. Unfortunately, part of the issues that fuel this are actually our customers on the ground. When they say, no, the project is coming and no one participates, this is a project, nobody is going to come from outside to come and intervene with your project. Alright? Now, when the main contractors land there, they already land in this environment where people have ownership of the project. And they will not allow others to come in and participate. This is the business problem, check. And we need solutions as far as this is concerned, because it also leads to the lack of growth of our SMEs. Because if you're participating in the project, you build capacity, you've got manpower, there are skills, and so on and so forth, and as a business, you have capacitated yourself to deliver. Now, once you are done with that project, ordinarily you want to move on to the next one. Now, if you are denied an opportunity in the next ward or in the next municipality, that curtails your growth. So this is a real issue, a real threat to SME growth, and you need to have a look at that and come up with solutions. Unsustainable market. This is another problem that we have shared, where you find that we need to continuously train our SMEs on how to price properly. People must understand that you must not just tithe for the sake of lending at all. You must tithe sustainably. We do not want a situation, Chair, where people go into projects not having debt, but emerge out of projects full of debt. It can't. So we need to train our people to address it tight. You rather not get involved in the project, Chair, as opposed to getting involved and then find that when you exit the project, now you've got debt of 100,000, 200,000. You are definitely in a worse off situation than when you initially decided to get involved in the project. So this is another area that we need to look at. In terms of empowering our SMEs, there is another challenge that we call political currency phenomenon. And this affects in the main those SMEs that come into this market because of political connectivity they can get. About the projects, you find that there is no sustainability in their businesses. After 5 years, when they are changed politically, you find that their businesses don't actually survive. And this is a problem. So we need to also address those issues. When you give SMEs opportunities to grow, ideally you want them to be sustainable so that you don't lose that capacity. You must understand that every time an SME fails, it means that we are losing capacity. The investments that we have made in that company has doubled. We are losing because they are not going to be sustainable. Now we must focus on another set of SMEs that we need to empower. So we cannot keep on doing the same thing over and over again without realizing the return on investment that we are making in this company. I did check last year, as far as the challenges are concerned, we are still convinced from the veterans point of view that we are yet to see a development as such in terms of this year. This is our regulator, and most importantly, we like to say to the chair that they did in the CID in this development, but we are not seeing up until this point. There must still be a strategy from the CID as to how they are going to empower the innovation sector. Solution set, because we are not here to lament and to blame you with all these problems. I think as the Blackwood Council, we have given much thought to some of the solutions that we can then apply to limit the challenges that we have alluded to earlier. As far as the solutions are concerned, Chair, on the Economic Development Program, we have been actively working with DPW to ensure that the Economic Development Program opportunities, especially from the 3 to the 7, are taken up in the market. The last update that they issued was the response from the market was very poor, and we thought that in working together with DPW, we can then be able to get the market excited about this and ensure that at the end of the day, there is significant take-up of the opportunities that will be coming through. But we must also say, Chair, that this, when DPW plans, it must not only plan for itself and its immediate institution. DPW must understand, as we said earlier, that they must exert authority. Whatever it is that they put together, as far as the community development program is concerned, this must be adopted by other clients out there, whether it's SOEs, other departments, or municipalities. So in our planning, we must not only look at planning internally and only look at the project that we will allocate as DPW internally. We must also give guidance to other client bodies out there as to how they must go about implementing contractor development. The department must significantly increase its capacity in order to effectively and efficiently implement the CVP. It's very important that the department is appropriately capacitated. If it is not, this program is going to fail. So we must not fail to plan. So let's make sure that the PMO or the PMU in the department is sufficiently capacitated so that when rollout happens, we can run it efficiently without any problems. At the moment, we're not convinced that the department is appropriately capacitated. The department must undertake advocacy work to ensure implementation of the contractor development program beyond the CPW family at this point we have already made. The CIB shouldn't be lax in implementing policies meant to empower emerging businesses. The PEC status, which is the potential emerging business, as alluded to earlier, must enjoy mandatory application. Client bodies must see to it that they are capacitated. Check. At the moment when you see the CIB, they think on behalf of the other guidelines, but to say, no, but this people don't have capacity. So we cannot force them to do certain things. And so we're saying that's the wrong approach. If our agenda is a developmental agenda, let's plan to be developmental. And if it requires other role players to capacitate themselves so that they can then be able to be responsive to our policies, let that be their problem. We can't sit and say simply because the Department of Transport doesn't have enough engineers or enough consultants to be able to have the capacity to support our SMEs, then we shouldn't force them. No. Let's put the policy, it is the responsibility of that department to capacitate themselves to ensure that they develop our contractors. And that's what we're saying. When it comes to policies that must empower our SMMEs, Chair, we must be very clear on this and ensure that implementation happens. We cannot find ourselves in a situation where we're wish-wash and we're not sure and we're paying for the other class. The importance of the CIDB in instructing public sector clients to unbundle projects to allow for meaningful participation by the energy sector must be reduced. So, Chair, when we complain to the CIDB that we are seeing the Department of Basic Education clustered in 30, 40 schools and thereby making sure that these projects are out of reach for everyone, the CIDB must be empowered to intervene. Well, they do have policies that support unbundling and so on, but they are not being enforced. So when we go to the CIP and complain about this, the CIP must be empowered to engage the Department of Education. And so I don't think that this is the correct way of going about implementing this process. Can we please unbundle them so that we can be able to assist as many of our developing contractors as possible? Of course, the pushback from the other side will be, but we need to fast track development. At the end of the day, we must fight each other. So the must be a little of those kind of let's balance delivery and empowerment. That's important. And in most cases, we try to take such cases, Chair, to, for instance, the Chief Procurement Officer and Minister Treasury, and they are also having a bit of a difficulty intervening in such instances. Hence, we are saying that the CIDB as a regulator will be empowered to intervene in such instances. Our sources to implementing agents, as we alluded to earlier, the KUHAS, the PDSA, must be accompanied with a clear instruction to undertake contract development. So we should be able to say to them, DDSA, as we are implementing this project, we want to, when we report back, to tell us what we've done for contract development. That must be clear. And again, this is a role that must be played by either the CIDB or the department. Because this is our industry. We need to really set the pace and dictate how things are done as far as implementation of project is concerned. The other issue is that obviously the 30% many times are contracting as far as the PFA regulations are concerned. Chair and committee members, we are doing quite a lot of work at the moment together with the National Treasury to actually come up with a strategy as to how the 30% must be implemented in the construction industry. Because if you look at the PFA regulations, it's 30% across the board. But we want to come up with a dispensation specifically for the construction industry. So if you look at how it is going to happen at the moment, when it comes to identifying potential beneficiaries to benefit from construction projects, that list of beneficiaries can, at the moment, either come from the client, central supplier database, or the main contractors themselves. We are now waiting with Treasury on the modalities as to how this must happen. Number two, we are also saying to the Treasury that the beneficiaries of the 30% must be paid directly by the client to avoid abuse by the main contractors. Because at the moment, main contractors enter into contact with the subcontractors, and one of the clauses in there is that we will pay you when we get paid. But at the end of the day, the poor subcontractor doesn't know when the main contractor gets paid, because they don't have a direct relationship with the client. And we end up in a situation where the subcontractors don't ever get paid. And this is the abuse that we're talking about, that is measured out to subcontractors by the main contractor. So we are arguing our case before Treasury at the moment to say, as we implement this 30% in the construction industry, let them have a dispensation where the subcontractors can be paid directly by the main contractor. Another issue that we are arguing for is that before the main contractors are appointed, there must be the balancing of it. Because members of the community, you see, as contractors, we have our way around hiding money. So I can look at the trade where I will be required to subcontract and make sure that those I cut to the bone, and the trade where I will be implementing the packages directly, I can then hide money there. And we are saying we don't want to see that going forward. The rate must be balanced so that those rates where subcontracting will happen, at least there is enough money in there for our SMEs to survive. Check. We are also arguing that the P's and G's must also accompany that 30%, because as a subcontractor, I am expected to do certain things that at the moment is still the preserve of main contractors. So we must make sure that the financial resources are available for the subcontractors to participate greatly in this 30% allocation of work. The other one, and this list is not exhaustive, it's quite long, but we thought that in the interest of time, let's keep it short and tight, the retention guarantee. We are arguing Chair, that we should have a retention guarantee in lieu of the 10% cash retention. But it's a practice, Chair and committee members at the moment, is that if I'm a subcontractor, I am required to then give my main contractor 10% retention. This is cash out of my invoices every time I need to get paid. Now, that 10%, in most cases, is especially the profit for the SME. And what then happens is that for you to get that money back from the main contractor is a huge struggle. SMEs struggle to get that money 6 months, 12 months after they've completed the project. They still fight to get that 10% out of the main contractor. So we are saying, instead of the main contractor keeping the cash, let the main contractor be given a retention guarantee. And this is under the 30% dispensation that we are now entering into. Chair, we are very keen to work together with Treasury as well as DPW to do monitoring and evaluation on the implementation of the certain PFL regulations and how the 30% is going to be applied in the construction industry. The other issue that we spoke about as a significant challenge was the issue of funding. Now, Chair, as you are well aware, and committee members, we have got this thing called skills and funds that comes out of the community scope. Now, it is going to be capitalized to the tune of 1.5 billion dollars over 7 years, and we have now submitted a proposal that half of that must then be set aside to assist our SMEs with working capital as well as performance guarantees. Now, this is another area, Chair, where we are saying that, again, the Department of Public Works must exert this authority, because you are nowhere in this discussion. Since Minister Chulasi has left, we take a gap. We are now dealing with Minister Nkwinti and Minister Ibrahim Patel, and we must register now that we are not in the with progress as far as this is concerned. We need to start implementing this voluntary reducing progress, this settlement agreement. We need to start implementing it. And again, our custodian is not in the picture. That's a big concern for us. So, this opportunity there, we can be able to go to the Reserve Fund to say to the trustees there, and by the way, government must still appoint trustees to sit on the staff. The private sector has already appointed its trustees, Chair, and committee members. Government has not appointed its trustees to sit on the trust. So we must make sure that government appoints the trustees so that we can then take decisions that must support government's agenda as far as this fund is concerned. We are in discussions, Chair and committee members, with IDC to say they must come out. So if we are going to have at least half of the 1.5 billion rand sitting there, we can then get the other half from the IDC. It will then work out that in the end we can have a fund of 1.5 billion rand, and this fund can support SMEs across the country. So those in the industry who are not directly involved in the various programs, the settlement agreement and the voluntary business program, at least they can then benefit from the fund. So it doesn't matter where they are. Whether you are sitting in the Bofo or in the Western Cape or in the Eastern Cape, if you are dealing a project and you require working capital, you require a government guarantee, this assistance can be made available. But we need to work together so that we can then make this assistance available for our SMEs. And this one, Chair, is in our control. This is not money from the banks. This is money, and by the way, already the established companies have paid 120 million rand to Treasury already. So the money is sitting there. We just need to get ourselves together and say half of that must come this way so that we can start benefiting our SMEs. And then we can start addressing this challenge of access to working capital. There are issues, Chair, as far as the private sector funding initiatives are concerned. Standard Bank is in the space, after is in the space, but we are still not getting significant traction in the market because you are still dealing with bank, basically. So there are still issues that we need to address so that SMEs can seamlessly get access to assistance from the banks. It will be some form of a journey until we get there, but at least the private sector is coming into this space, but we are not seeing that traction significantly at the moment, Chair. Again, in order to widen the options for SMEs, the WCD has developed an export desk, and we're working together with the CIDB as well as the Built Environment Professionals Export Council, DPEC, to encourage our SMEs to export their services to the rest of the continent. So we are saying to our SMEs, don't only look at opportunities in South Africa, there are opportunities beyond our borders, and we are helping them to be able to access those opportunities beyond the border. I just want to quickly at this juncture to give over to my TG, Maggie Nanadas, to unpack to the committee as to what the core of model is that they are implementing a sound care housing. Sorry, in housing, not sharing.
Thank you very much, CEO. Good morning to you, gentlemen, and thank you, Chairperson, for the event. Let me introduce my name, Dilekina, and I'm wearing two caps, one is that of the TG of the UCB, and the other one is that of being the president of the Corruption Union in construction. Maybe just for the benefit of the opportunity, I must emphasize that SAWIC was actually born out of the Department of Public Works. It is a branch out from the Department of Public Works. And right now, one of the things that we have registered with the new minister was that SAWIC was very much homeless and very much uncared for. But it helped because it seems like the responsibility or the lack thereof within the built environment is rather across board. Because as we have heard, the CEO and the iteration that this is the UCDD sort of left out of the land ministry, which is supposed to be the Department of Public Works. But to get back to the subject of the day, in terms of the co-op that we have sort of presented to you this summer, was that we looked at the amount of work or the amount of milestone that has been covered by government in partnership with the private sector in ensuring that there's development in the sector, in ensuring that women do grow their businesses and their own sustainable businesses within the construction sector. And we found that much as we are pointing the finger at government, we as the private sector also supposed to come up with solutions. And also looking at the reality of saying how many women are there if you look at the register of the contractors, and how much is it going to take and how long is it going to take to have each and every one of those women registered construction companies to become empowered. And so that's going to take generations after generations. So we have to come up with a model that says, how then do we ensure that there is mass development that is happening in any given project? Then we came up with a model of cooperatives. And these cooperatives were actually inspired by the fact that when we look at the 20 years of the existence of the SAWIC as an organization, we'll find that women have been participating in the construction sector as labor-only kind of contractors. So if you're a labor-only kind of subcontractor, you cannot now go to the CIPD and upgrade your company, you know, from grade 1 to grade 1. So you could be able to be doing a project of 5 million, 10 million then, but when you get to the CIPD, you need to show the entire movement of money from being a supplier to being eligible from having paid your suppliers and supplying materials to the employees and all of that. But if you are labor only, then your efforts does not count, you know, to qualifying as one of the companies that need to be upgraded. So we look again at the current situation of these companies. Why is it that they are not growing? And we found that they are unable to grow because they have got something but they lack something else. Like for instance, company A, over the years of being a labor-only kind of subcontractor, might have managed to have enough money maybe to buy your tools of trade, like your wheelbarrows, your shovels, your trussels, and all of that. And then company B might not have had enough money to buy things other, but they have got access into funding that can allow them to buy a van for that matter. And then company C has got something that company A and B does not have. So individually they're not able to perform a full contract. But if you put them collectively, they can be able to jointly put together their resources and then they can be able to execute a project that gets put together. So we also look at the issue of saying the risk at hand is that there is that stereotype out there that cooperatives don't work in South Africa. Again, we have to look at it. Why is that cooperative has been embargoed or has been dubbed a model that does not work? And again, we also accept the fact that one of the reasons why cooperatives don't start to work is because we find that they are put in a large number. You know, and they are mostly used in your rural areas, they are mostly used for your big projects and all of that. And you find one cooperative that has got 100 people in it. So it's problem number one there, because for you to be able to have a mix that's going to correct for this cooperative to be able to take a better decision, you need that these people as well. Now, if you are in a situation whereby most of the people are scattered all over the show, how do you get them to one meeting at a time for you to be able to have an impact in terms of having a meeting that becomes successful? So we have reduced the number of members within that cooperative to the minimum, because the minimum is 5 minutes. And that helps a lot, because it's easier to have a group of 5 people to be able to run together than to have a group of 100 people or even more, you know, for them to be able to run. And we also make sure that we provide them with the support that is necessary in terms of taking the cooperative and looking at the people that can be able to supply them with materials, to be able to also look at people that can be able to assist with finance, because as the CEO is alluded, this industry is very much capital intensive, especially at the beginning of the project. You need to have enough money for you to be able to move with the project. So we've ended up now with one project where we wanted to test the model. The project was worth about 60 million rand in Sokulun. I'm sure Chair from the other portfolio, you know about the Sokulun project. By the way, it won an award, for the Government Media Award. So we did very well. So there we ended up now having 5 cooperatives. Formed by 5 women in each cooperative, which was a representative of over 30 women-owned companies in one project. And this project could have been easily done by a great 5 company, one company. But we decided to abandon it to ensure that these women are exposed to an opportunity at hand. So at the end of the day, we ended up being able to have each and every one of those cooperatives doing a project that is worth about 6.5 million each. So in that case, you are able to have them to grow, to maintain a team together in one or the other, giving the support. And at the same time, it allows government to be able to stretch every rent that is available, so that you don't end up empowering one to the same suspect all the time, but it becomes a mass kind of a corruption when it comes to empowering the union. What we've gained out of that is the fact that we have been provided with a springboard. So the exposure that they had, that they could not have had, had they went into tendering alone as individuals. Now they were exposed to this particular kind of thing, etc. They now know what to do when it comes to them going out there to tender for a project from A to Z. And out of the success of that particular project, the Department of Human Settlement and Human Housing had now to give another project to SAWIC, to the 1966 Women Empowerment Program, to the middle cost of 30 million rand. And there, we've now expanded, because now we've got about 24 cooperatives that are working in that project.
Thank you very much, Chair. So there is definitely an opportunity to massify this program, this kind of an approach, so that we can then be able to empower our cooperatives. Chair, the last slide of the Commission, insofar as ensuring access, especially for our youth, we are already partnered with the South African Council for Graduation Cooperatives. They've placed 10 of their interns in our call center and national training. So in future, Chair, one of the things that we want to do is to present to this committee for this as a trend in terms of delay or non-payment of service providers. And that call center, which the counselors provided us a call center in the school, is going to enable us to do that. So that when you call the DG or any HODs of the previous of the various provincial departments, we can then distribute data in front of you so that we can then be able to call them to account when it comes to the issue of late and non-payment of SMEs. The other issue that we think, as far as the COPs are concerned, is vital is that the CIP can assist in giving us the stats so that we can check as to how many cooperatives are registered on the list of contractors. This will also enable us to track their progress and development. Because at the moment, they are lumped together with normal companies, and we have differentiated between COPs and normal companies so we get the stats that they are. So the CIP can definitely assist, give us the co-op stats. Apparently, then we can, on an annual basis, look at the movement as far as the co-ops sets are concerned. Again, in order to alleviate the problem for our emerging contractors, the CIDP has assisted after many years of fighting check by suspending downgrading. And we are saying that it should not only be a suspension, we should find a permanent solution to the issue of downgrading. And also, we have presented a case before the CIDP to say that, in fact, this must also go beyond grade 6 and it should go all the way to grade 9. So these are the solutions, Chair, that we have thought about as far as some of the SME challenges are concerned from our side. The last slide, Chair, deals with the agenda for our next meeting. So we are inviting ourselves here to the next meeting. It's very important. Since we have not been receiving invitations, so we should be calling and give you the agenda for the next meeting. So in the next meeting, we would like to see the committee and talk more about the development. As we already said, we are not happy about with the absence of DPW as far as discussions of the DRP are concerned. So that's top of our list because there are many challenges there that require your leadership as the portfolio committee so that we can get things right under this program. We also want to talk about the banking assurance program. Again, Chair, when the banking assurance program was introduced, the ETI kicked us out of that program as a construction industry. We fought for our re-inclusion. We are now re-included. Again, we must come up with a plan as to how we are going to implement the Black Industries program in the construction industry. Again, we want the leadership of the department on this because everyone else out there is still waiting for the department to take the terms as to how this is going to work. For instance, other industries that came after us, agricultural businesses, were included after our inclusion. Already, they've got a billion money on the table and they're working with GTI to ensure that the Malaysian farmers are assisted. Now these people were being included after us, and we are still trying to figure out how we're going to do this. So again, we are putting this on the table for our next engagement. The review of the Act and the regulations should be on the table. One of the issues that we are really looking at the moment, Chair, is to establish a new industry in the construction waste. Again, let's plan how we're going to do that. But the new industry must establish it. We must create employment and the department, we must be able to say the department and the stakeholders have started a new industry and this is our contribution towards economic growth, creating of job opportunities and so on. We must be able to do so. So we must not depend on others. Let's take practical steps so that we can be seen doing something about the challenges that are facing our economy and our sector in particular. Lastly, Chair, we want to talk about the issue that we stated earlier, the state-owned construction bank and the construction company. These are issues that we should be debating here and where we should be providing leadership as a custodian of the leaders, not being led by other departments as far as the concerned. Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you very much, CEO. Thank you very much, TG. We want to move straight to the South African Council of Governments. Before we give so that we see how best to be trying to manage time. If I remember to apply that, I think we must have good inputs now. Can I get the education? Honorable Marcel? The mic.
Thank you very much, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think your suggestion is quite, because otherwise we'll be running out of time.
Thank you very much. I take it that the presenter for the South African Council for Graduates is ready.
Thank you, Chair.
Can we hand over yourself? CEO, I'm quite happy with this presentation. So because you're telling people that are present, that you don't see them, they are upset as well. So I'll hear how they are going to respond. Department. I'm interested in here. Does any receiving on duty? The CIA is carrying out. Graduates? Thank you.
Provided for the next presentation now.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Committee members. And with all officials and colleagues. My name is Samsa Kamakudera. I come from the South African Council for Graduate Cooperative. I'm here in my capacity as the Executive Chairperson of the organization. We're here to talk about built environment for innovation and inclusive development in a manner and a way that affects youth, students and graduates as professionals and also as engineers. Madiba said, "Your brain small does not serve the world. Who are you not to be great?" There is no way in which young people cannot believe and realize their greatness because of conditions that they find themselves in. Greatness ensures that young people will be able to become victors over any and every condition. And we believe that this population should be the bridge to enable young people to become victors and ensure that ours become a great nation. Chair, built environment is not just about beautiful skyscrapers. It is about sustainable livelihoods and quality of human life. I said in the beginning that sustainable built environment would not be achieved when Department of Public Works is working in isolation and away from the Department of Human Settlements. We need both departments to work together. I will not spend much time on integrated built environment. I do believe that the leaders that are here, the committee that are here, are quite limited and are probably much more than in these areas. I'd like to bring in the twin challenges quickly on the issues of the built environment. One is that built environment contributes to global warming. And this is how it does so. Construction in the built environment makes sustainable, substantial contribution to global warming, and that affects our economy in so many ways. There are a lot of environmental, social, and economic deviations that are attributed to built environment. Global scale is outlined below. 40% of the energy is consumed by built environment as an industry globally. 30% of fresh water is used to this extent. 25% of wood harvested is used in built environment. 40% of material use is through built environment. And of course, this sector employs about 10% of the world's workforce. Buildings are typically located on the most productive land, estimated at about 150 million hectares worldwide, mostly on primary agricultural land. We've got beautiful buildings and starving people. On the other side, there are socioeconomic factors such as unemployment, squatter camps, or what we tend to call as informal settlements, and poor working conditions. In South Africa, we do know that the construction and built environment have had some very bad reputation for exploiting employees in lower status. Growing unemployment, evasive transformation, and declining earnings are factors that continue to trouble this sector. Allegations of corruption and price collusion by big players in the industry are quite clear, as you see in the media. There's limited uptake of fresh graduates and professionals in the sector, and of course, the issues of unfair competition and being advanced. I'll not dwell much on this for the sake of time. I will not spend much time on this. I would like them to move in to the statistics provided by SSA with regards to, that would be on page slide 9. What are the odds for or against graduates of different racial groups in South Africa? Specifically, that there are over 300,000 graduates in South Africa unemployed. That's a wasted human capital, less than investment. Capital that could be stored in good use.
You have 7 minutes,
I am battling to find page numbers before the copies we have got. Also, I do not quite understand why certain pages of the script only understanding offer explanation that time is being saved. We are not here to save time, we are here to use time. So I have a problem if someone offers to skip certain pages to save time.
Okay. Now maybe what we can do, because the chair is indicating for the no saving time,
it's in the interest of the same members, so they come to me crying. If you realize, I spoke for 1 minute. I didn't speak because I was there with the logistics. Not to mention, there were no one, so I was saving time. So I think maybe what you can do, indicate where you are standing, so that we are together. When you are moving to a page, take us along. I don't think there's a harm there. But when we don't know how to look around, where are you? We're not sure where. So when we read for ourselves, there's no doubt about it. And also we don't have time, there's no doubt about it. And I know there are members we will be running out, they will leave me alone here. So but do indicate where you are now so that you can follow me.
Thank you, sir. I think that is a very worthy request. I would definitely use the time that I've been speaking. Thank you so much. I would request that we go back to slide 5, where we talk about the twin challenges of youth development, which we looked at that and then we dealt with that slide. The following slide talks about the negative effects of youth development, where we realize that over 23% of carbon emissions in South Africa are generated through this industrial sector. And if you look at the vehicle-based and construction transport planning in South Africa, it has averaged to about 16% of the CO2 emissions, which an additional 18 CO2 per year, or about 4% of South Africa's CO2 emissions come from the manufacturing of those. And that is coming from the CICD report in 2009. And so this requires that we don't only look at these as challenges or problems, but it begins to say how do we fast track innovation? Because we're a council for graduates, we are not just going to sit and work on problems. We would like CICD, we would like CBE and all these other councils to ensure that they are in areas of research, to ensure that there are homegrown solutions to these problems. The next slide continues to talk about the built environment and its contribution to the environment. Sustainable development, which aims to achieve social and economic improvement while reducing negative environmental effects, can be used to address the climate change, poverty, and challenges in South Africa. And these are not South African problems alone, they are global phenomena. However, we realize that it is difficult to achieve these because it requires a holistic and integrated approach, and the development sector, and in particular the construction sector, tends to operate in a highly fragmented way, have spoken about public works and human settlements. These two needs to work together, not only at the implementation side or cycle, but also at the planning phase. Because there are a lot of gains that would be achieved when there's high level of integration among and between these two departments. The application of sustainable development is also not well understood and has not been able to translate into practical action that can be implemented. We believe, Chair, that there's a lot of wastage in terms of material usage where these two departments operate and act in isolation. There could be a lot of gains from a material development point of view, from transfer of certain materials from one department to another, if this is achieved, not only at the departmental level, but also at the end user level in terms of who are the beneficiaries, be it private clients, be it the users of the actual buildings, commercial buildings, or actually the residential accommodation that is being built. The next slide. What does it mean for graduates to be in the built environment space? We are quite happy, Chair, of that to report and register that we have a partnership with CBE that seeks to ensure that we grow a number of graduates to be involved in a candidacy program, which will then enable that a large number of those that are sitting at 300,000 unemployed can be put to productivity. CBE has been very consistent in ensuring that we have a process of consultation with a lot of VAs but also a lot of professional counselors to ensure inclusion and involvement of young people. I must also point out the fact that the Department of Public Works has been our largest host of unemployed graduates. I must say the department on that side and that score has done a very good job. Over 258 interns are in base services being placed at various sites in the Department of Public Works. And we would like to see that grow and not only limited to issues of graduates, because graduates are not graduates just to be employed, they want graduates to run their own businesses and even cooperatives. Built environments cover infrastructure, roads, railways, tunnels, bridges, and dams. Buildings, as well as the systems that make buildings usable, such as heating and ventilation. Where are these manufactured? Especially on the material side, we would like to ensure that young people are involved, especially through cooperatives, and this should not be started and cannot be started only after they've left university. That is why we started working on what we call campus cooperatives to ensure that young people can graduate and run their own businesses instead of looking for employment. But we cannot do this without the NHBRC and CIDB. And I'm saying this to say to CIDB, the numbers that I heard talking about that 10% of the unemployed must actually be absorbed by the companies that are registered with the CIDB, over 4,000 students and artisans or interns must be absorbed by CIDB and its latest organization. That would increase the number, but we need to see how this portfolio committee can assist us, that this has become a talk shop, but it becomes a reality. The sector employs engineers in civil, structural, building services, environmental and geotechnical roles, as well as some specialists in areas such as acoustics. The main employers are consultants who advise clients to block designs and oversee projects and contractors who carry out building work. In the main, the government is the player. And we compare with BCCBD to say government must be able to use the authority that it has. Because in the main, the government, you look at the total budget of built environment, a large proportion of it comes from the public funds. But when you look at the effects of transformation, they are quite low. So we would like to see engineers recruited by developers and by large clients such as retailers and developer authorities, but also put the proportion of unemployed graduates, the proportion of new graduates, the proportion of candidates that they will be able to function within the scope. If we do that, Chair, this 100,000 number of college and university students who are not able to graduate because they were looking for work in a better plan would not be as high as it is today. Because these two departments and their agencies would be able to take a large portion of these young people. This statistics chair, the only paragraph that we have at the bottom of the graph says that only 13% of colored graduates are able to secure employment. It goes on to say that only 16% of African graduates are able to secure employment. What happens to the rest? 30%, 39.7% of Indian, South African graduates are able to get employment, whereas 47% of European or white South Africans are able to get employment. Let's look at the disparities. We do know that the massification project that came as a result of the Higher Education Act of 1997 brought about a large number of graduates or students being the people of color, colored and African people. But when you look at the employment results, they're very low. How are we going to change this around? We cannot afford to just wait and say young people must go to university and hope that they'll get employment. Which employment? It even speaks bad of education. Young people are not only interested in going to school. What is the point? You've got your degree, but you're unemployed. I'd rather go and steal, I'll be better. That's the reason of some of the people. And I beg to differ, I do know the values of higher education, because I've seen what it has done in my own life. So, Chair, we're requesting that these patterns can be changed, but we cannot change them if we do not have a monitoring the evaluation practice, at least on a quarterly basis. Not that we're trying to invite ourselves back here, but we're saying these are not followed up, and I'm not saying because this is not, we're not invited back here. CIBC and other partners will not be able to do what they commit that we're doing. But it is important that this community is able to assure itself to say that this work has been done and achieved. We've seen on the social media a large number of exact people going over there to say, I'm unemployed, what can be done? The SACGC now is synonymous. Whenever I go on the social media, they see these people and get flooded with these requests. We are very happy that today some of these young people were sent to us and we've become a home for them and they received their attention. This young person was a master's degree in chemical engineering, been unemployed for close to 2 years, with very good marks. Not that she just passed. Very good marks. Yes. How then do we say go to school when that is the outcome of your education? This is who we are. I'll talk purely on our mission. These are our board members, these are men and women that have the joy and the pleasure of working with you, so that we continue with our work to grow a high caliber of youth and advance private cooperatives as viable economic entities to accelerate innovation and industrialization problems. We support the best industrialization problems, but it cannot just go to the familiar characters. What is the proportion of youth? What is the proportion of women? What is the proportion of people with disabilities in the best industrialization program? So that is our view, that's our work. And we continue to say we are going to advance growing a high caliber youth, getting involved in schools, getting involved in colleges, getting involved in universities, because that is the prime age for them. If we don't reach them there, they will continue with their studies and hoping that they'll get a job and they'll not job to get. Next slide. This talks to our key programs, especially the internship programs. This seems to be a good picture, but it's not good at all. It's foundational, but it poses a serious risk. As a council, we have a high reliance on CICA funding. That's very, very risky, especially right now when there's such an intermittent policy around the CICA issues. NSDF3 has been extended to 2020. We don't know post-2020 whether we'll still have CICA or not. What happens when that, God forbid, happens? There will be no SACGC. 80%, over 80% of our budget is CICA funded. 330 of which are funded by food and beverages. Very good program. 400 of these are funded by CICA. If the CICA chose to do things differently and not just focus on intent, decided to say get 100 young people across South Africa, form them into cooperatives. Then that can support them and see how best they can go. They need now access to the market. They have all the compliance issues, they need access to the market so they can do business. They've been trained through the EDPC, the SACGC, as well as the Northwest University Business School. You can train only one if you do not have business to become business. Today I moved to FPM CITA, which is a fiber processing and manufacturing CITA. Another very good CITA which has got huge relevance to this department, especially on the area or the side of materials development. Would like to see as many young people, a lot of people, kids in this CITA at the Department of Public Works. What I want to spend a little bit of time on is the issue of candidacy. 30 of these are at the Department of Public Works. Both the chemical CITA and food level fund with this intent, with a stipend of $5,000 a month. If you look at the need chair, the problem is 50, the need is sitting at 200,000. How can we use this as a base to achieve more? CIDB, how can you come on board? Because really, there's no way we'll make it. How do we even begin to choose when we go to these different centers, be it Polokwane, be it in Tata, to select these young people? We become flattered. It becomes so painful to leave these young people out. Not that we leave them out because they don't qualify, we leave them out because we can only take a handful. These problems can grow, and young people can only be able to be empowered and be equipped when they begin to get involved in green projects through the country's program. This becomes key pillars for all our internships. One is the job assessment. We assess each and every intent, because internship is not just for you to tick the box. We want to ensure that the internship is relevant to your career. That's why the job match and the job fit assessment that we conduct. And I think we have been a lot. We have required from the department the host of our intent evidence of skills transfer. Ms. Vangela Manzini and her team, the Department of Public Works, they know when we host our intent, we need the evidence, the skills transfer metrics. How many of these interns? How are they being groomed? What competences and skills are they coming up with at the end of the program? So that is what we need, and we need more support, because these programs are expensive. Finally, the sense of opportunity. We do not want interns to just get employment within the department or the entity where they've been hosted. We want them to be referred as well. If you cannot hire an intern, refer them to another organization. And I must say, though, that Department of Public Works, companies like Avenge took 55 of these 1,500 interns, and out of the 55 chips, Avenge has already, within 6 months, employed 27. So we need more of the private sector companies that will come on board in these transfers. In Richards Bay, in Durban, in Cape Town, they say, send us more of these people. We need to see the impact in terms of absorption. But if you cannot hire them internally or refer them, you can give them enterprise and company development opportunities. There are many of these we do know. And not only within the state-owned entities, within the contractors of the department. That is where the department has the power. DG, we need more of those. If we cannot achieve the target of getting contractors to take these intents, give them enterprise development opportunities, will not achieve the target. Remember, this has got a lot of effects that would then enable the companies and such a good supply, reliable supply. People who come in and serve as intents, now you take them further, they become your own suppliers. It's even good that they become even your competitors. Better to have a competitor you know than one you don't know. Because we're going to build that level of competition. Next slide, Chair. Barriers to candidates and registration. We realize that there's lack of awareness about and by professional bodies and professional candidates. We've even taken this, we're serving a presidential working group. Chair, the issue of candidates is a big problem. It takes white students or graduates about 3 years to go through the candidacy program and be registered. It takes African kids about close to 10 years. You can go to EXA, you'll find it. You can go and get this information, CBE. Why do we have to have so much time wasted? There's a lot of gatekeeping. How do we use the strategy of dangling the carrot and equipping to ensure that we achieve? So you cannot have these people having their time wasted. They become people of life. A lot of graduates with technical skills are sharp speakers. How do we do that? We see some of them becoming queue marshals, some of them are cadets. Yet they answered the call that Matiba made to say education is the most useful tool you can use to change. There's then the cost of registration. Registration with professional bodies. We've started this discussion with the CBE, and I think that we would be making some progress, but we really request the support of the portfolio committee. do not say it's separate completely. We do know that they need to rely on it, but give students and graduates, which are disadvantaged, a subsidized rate. There's a very limited progression of black students who are taking compression and higher degrees. Lack of willing and available mentors to good black students. That is there, it's very high. We assigned an MOU with Parliament in October for the very purpose of ensuring, Chair, that we have a national mentorship program. Who's training the mentors of these graduates? It's not money. So we're very happy to report that Parliament took that opportunity to say, let us interested because we are good with raising funds, let's work together in this aspect. So we'd like to report that to the portfolio committee, but we'd like to see that program run. Because if it doesn't run, then it will also again become another chop shop. Universities are not proactive and they play a minimal role to champion practices. Universities, they leave you at the end. Once you get your certificate in university, without the students, the graduates are left on their own to fend for themselves. And that is why we become an elitist. Level of appropriation and guidance at schools, especially in transit and rural areas, is prevalent. And this limits awareness of careers in the sector. We look at the access statistics. There's a very bias towards mechanical and electrical. Other engineering and related careers are not being pursued, especially by African students. There's also a limited black students pass with good rates in medical science. The board of CBE has challenged us to say, look, here's a seed fund, see if we can get graduates in science and math qualifications to go to schools and serve as mentors. And if we do for 200, how to grow and achieve the critical mass? So we need then further support from DPW. DPW has got lots of money. Not money of its own, but money of its contractors because of the business that it gives to its contractors. So there are multiplier effects that we can achieve at the moment without achieving it. Next slide, Chair. Barriers to registration as professionals. We see that there's some preoccupation of companies with profit in not even capacity pipeline. There's nothing wrong with this certified profit. But let the needs be able to work together. I've spoken of companies like Transnet, Avenge, PATCO to take our interest, give them opportunities. PATCO spends 50 million rand a month on diesel. But if you look at it, there's only one supplier. They use 600,000 tires a year. Here's an opportunity for recycling of those tires. We are the black organizations, black companies, youth rights companies. We were invited by DBS Marine in Cape Town. They purchased our innovation, the black, the business toolbox innovation. For the first time, the company came here and said, we're looking for black suppliers. These are strategies that we can prove. DBS Marine spent 700 million rand a year just on buying paint. Eco-friendly paint for their boats. So we need help in that front to ensure that the supplier that is groom and develop will then be able to also meet the requirements of these organizations. These are activities share as I mentioned, as we believe also that the department of public works and public settlements are not working in union and that creates a lot of wastage in the system. There's a lot of money in the intactive system, but it's not aligned. And then it's not achieving the extra result. CITAS has been on very, very good work. Had it not been the CITAS, we've not been here as an organization. The unemployment charges affect progression to professional registration. So we request that this be at the level of registration. Students cannot be left on their own university to start on. But they are actually getting something fast as well. The school communication is limited awareness by professional counselors and professional bodies to attract their attention. We believe that the there's a gatekeeping and a certain goal that takes place. We're not saying standards must be lowered. I had an opportunity of studying in Australia and I was doing my MBA in South Korea. I was able to compete in the best of the best in the world. So we do know that our African students are quite capable. And we must be given an exception. When an environment has not provided an exception, then we are made to fail. In that way, we want to be able to assist BBCBD. The little contribution we made in our partnership with BBCBD, giving 10 graduates paying their stipends, it gives me such a joy to get a multiplier effect check. Because black contractors are allowed to be paid, because unemployed graduates helping each other. These unemployed graduates working on the national treasury, acquiring skills by helping, and black contractors are allowed to be paid. Then it becomes a cycle that helps us to come out of poverty. But only 10. What happens when the problem ends? You've asked me this question, Mr. Sabina, I'm not answering. I cannot guarantee what I should want the problem to continue. So there's no access to significant or catalytic projects by black graduates in the West. I've spoken about the 3.5 billion grant that the Development Finance Agreement has set aside in 2014 check. I know this is a different portfolio committee, but I'm raising this because I've spoken about the level of integration between the two departments. There's no practice notes even today. We are close to 2019. What's going to happen to that 2.5 billion that never set aside for youth contractors? The minister made a declaration, but there was no follow up. Each time we want to find out what is happening, we give excuses about policy not being in place. That's going to be the case here. Probable solutions and my last slide. Chair, we propose that the Ministry of the Targeted focus and access to mental science for our students. We cannot afford the existing of mental interest. We cannot afford it. We've got to groom our young people to become the global best. Not best in Africa, not best in the township. We want them to be global best. And I think it's important that we listen to medical science so that we can have homegrown innovation. Targeted support for career guidance in medical science learners in schools. It's very important. We like professionals in the built environment to go to schools to inspire young people. It does not take much. Spending 30 minutes, 45 minutes, or an hour in a school as a professional engineer or civil engineer would share so much life with these young people. Playing access to built environment and careers or patient competition investments of technology is key. We are the gold ones. We want them to see what is access to investment in college. Delivering support and career exposure through mentoring and workplace training for veterans to be specified targets. As I've said, there seems to be a plan not to include veterans from this purpose. Or even when they're included, they are just given insignificant roles. And therefore the portfolio of evidence becomes weaker and weaker. We cannot go forward. This is because there's very few professionals in this area. How do we get South Africans of all colors take pride in showing that they do another young person? Chair, we're asking for a free or subsidized access and association of students in professional bodies, professional counselors and voluntary associations. BBCBD, lead by example. We would like to address that. We're not saying free at all, we say subsidized where possible. If at all possible, we can have up until a certain time when they are able to employ them, they can pay. But why are those students out of the money? In 2 times the number of percentage of debt graduates and assigned to different roles in the catalytic project within the primary and public sector, public works, all the catalytic projects, CIDB, how do we include young people? Not just as a tick box, but I think it is important that we get them really involved. We are investing in our future. We are investing in South Africa. So that when we leave this earth, we will really be knowing that we left capable young people who have been trained and grown. The issue of brotherhood funding to include candidate registration as part of the package, because it becomes very wastage. You finish your studies, then you go home. There's no plan. It's just to say, after you finish studying, how you're going to meet. You're going to move to EFSA, you're going to move to the Project Management Council or other councils. There's no plan. So we rely on CBE to ensure that that is there. CBE must be used to advance it so that the councils and the VAs can begin and to work on those programs. We pledge for support of the consulting engineers of those environment companies to receive sufficient work. We do trust that when that happens, then there will be the probable automatic increase on the support of our young people, especially graduates in this area, that will benefit from the preferential procurement. But this must be a widespread national program instead of focusing on specific racial groups in terms of from the company side, so that we increase the numbers 15%, 13% is what you are. It's your ceiling, you can't go beyond that. We are colored, you've got 18% chance of being employed. You are African, you've got 16% chance of being employed. So in closing, say we need targeted mentoring of the students graduating candidates to be included in the professional CBD points to increase number of cultural internship in the research. Why should people earn CBD points shared by attending conferences alone? Really? Do you say you would like to see mentoring, quality mentoring though, being a key program that ends professional support for their CPD? In that way, we will be showing that South Africa is able to grow a high level of empowered and well-functioned young professionals. We need these young professionals. Without them, we want too much. So this includes, in my presentation, as I've said, intentions, candidacy program, and graduate writing their own business. Particularly as co-ops, because then we aim to achieve more together. Co-ops cannot be seen as NGOs. Co-ops are not NGOs. Co-ops are businesses. We want to emphasize that. We're not saying co-ops must be given handouts, but we're saying the policies of government which begins to say co-ops must be given a chance to grow, that must be implemented and enforced. It gets disturbing when you hear comments to say a policy cannot be enforced. Why have an act that cannot be enforced? Why have monitoring and evaluation where then cannot be enforced? Thank you very much. We appreciate this opportunity and would like to come back here to present on our success. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Kuvela. Honorable, I think we really want to take 10 minutes, strictly 10 minutes.